Hello and welcome back to Navigating Life with Neurodiversity. Following on from the last episode, I wanted to move the conversation on quite quickly from what can be quite a heavy and triggering topic to talk more about the aftermath of these effects. Survivor's guilt, the quiet and complex grief. It's a burden that many carry in silence, especially those on the front lines of trauma, and those who have lived through their own darkest moments. It's a subject I've danced about in previous episodes, previous writings, but it deserves a deeper dive. Because the truth is, survivor's guilt affects us in more ways than we often recognise, both professionally and personally. In this piece, I want to explore it from two distinct angles. First, from the perspective of medical professionals and first responders, those of us who routinely stand in space between life and death. And the second from a more intimate place, and that's the guilt that lingers after surviving a suicide attempt. And the quiet devastation of being treated as though you're fragile by the people around you. Interwoven through both narratives is another layer, how survivor's guilt uniquely affects those of us who are neurodivergent, particularly those of us on the autistic spectrum, who process emotions, relationships, and societal expectations differently from neurotypical individuals. For those of us in healthcare, survivor's guilt is often an unwelcome but familiar companion. We witness the chaos, the suffering, the unpredictability of life. Sometimes, despite our best efforts, people die. Sometimes we save one, we lose another. While others may call it just part of the job, those losses do leave a mark. To explore the anatomy of guilt on the job, it begins with questions. Why couldn't I save them? Did I miss something? What could I have done differently? These thoughts spiral, even when we know that clinically, logically, we did everything right. But medicine isn't always fair. When someone slips away, it's not just their family that grieves. We do too. But quietly, privately, usually while carrying on with the next call. Research from the Journal of Emergency Medical Services and the BMJ Open highlights how this guilt can evolve into something much more damaging, moral injury. And that's when a healthcare professional begins to feel as though they've violated their own ethical code, even when they haven't, because of the helplessness that comes with losing a patient. There's often no space to process these emotions in our field. The culture prizes resilience, stoicism, detachment, so we learn to suppress it. We absorb the loss and keep moving until that weight becomes too heavy. For neurodivergent professionals, especially those of us on the autistic spectrum, this guilt is often harder. The internal world is deeply analytical, intensely emotional, yet often poorly understood by others. We may not communicate grief or empathy in expected ways, which can lead to others to misread us as cold or unaffected. In reality, we feel it all, sometimes more deeply than others, but we struggle to find socially acceptable language or gestures to express it. We also tend to process events in detail, often looping on small moments, perceived mistakes, or interactions that didn't go according to plan. Autistic individuals can become hyper-focused on what went wrong, even when the outcome was beyond their control. This can deepen feelings of guilt, often making it harder to let go, because our minds don't naturally shift with the ease that a neurotypical mind might. Disenfranchised grief is common. It's a type of grief that isn't openly acknowledged or socially supported. And for those of us on the spectrum, this is even more isolating. When our emotional reactions don't mirror societal norms, we may become further excluded from the grieving process, compounding our guilt with a sense of invisibility or alienation. Ways to help evolve things like peer support debriefs that are trauma-informed and inclusive of different communication styles, As much as I hate the phrase, safe spaces to speak honestly without fear or judgment, where emotional expression isn't confined to neurotypical norms. Things like narrative therapy and reflective writing, both tools that I've found healing through my own blog and this podcast, which allow people like me who struggle to verbalize emotions in real time to process them in our own way and in our own language, and then communicate them in our own way at a time that is convenient to us in a space that feels safe. Healing doesn't mean forgetting. It means understanding your grief, your guilt, your survival as a testament to your humanity, not a flaw in your professionalism or your neurodivergence. Now, there is a flip side to survivor's guilt, the other side of this coin, one that is intensely personal. And that's when you survive a suicide attempt, it brings with it a very different kind of guilt. It's no longer about the lives lost around you. It's about the lives still here and how you've deeply changed them just by surviving. People talk a lot about regret after suicide attempts, as if surviving automatically comes with relief and gratitude. But sometimes you don't regret the attempt. You still remember why you did it, the pain, the emptiness, the sheer exhaustion. None of that is gone because you survived. But what you regret is the impact on others. You see it in their eyes, the worry, the sadness, the quiet fear that you might still break. You can hear it in their voices, the careful questioning, hesitation, the way that they tiptoe around you. Essentially, you see that you have become fragile in their eyes. Suddenly, you're not just you anymore. You're the person who almost died. Every emotion is analysed. Every bad day is a warning sign. People don't mean to do it, but their protectiveness can feel suffocating. And so the guilt grows. Not because you regret surviving, but because you hate that your pain became their pain. You see the ripple effect. You feel like you've become a burden in a new way. No longer through your suffering, but through your survival. Neurodivergence adds a layer of complexity. For autistic individuals, the aftermath can be even more disorienting. We often struggle with emotional nuance and the unwritten rules of how people expect us to act after a crisis. We may not grieve or recover in ways that others understand. We might not express guilt or remorse in conventional ways, leading others to misinterpret us as detached or unfeeling, when inside we're simply overwhelmed. What's worse is we might mask these feelings to protect others, leading to a disconnect between how we feel and how we're perceived. There is a pressure to appear stable, grateful, and better after surviving, and it's exhausting, especially when your internal world is still chaos. Your communication doesn't translate neatly into the neurotypical script. Basically, nobody prepares you for the aftermath, for the complexity of healing when everyone around you is still scared. You try to move forward, but now there is an added responsibility. You now need to protect others from your darkness, to prove every day that you're okay, even when you're not. But healing doesn't work that way. It's messy, it's non-linear, it's hard. And what makes it harder is pretending you're fine to reassure everyone else. But what does help is honest conversation, even if it sounds blunt, even if it comes in scripts we've had to rehearse. Let us speak in our own way. Permission to feel without guilt, because our emotional responses might be atypical, but they are valid. Being seen as a whole person again. Not just a fragile version of who we used to be, not just through the lens of our autism. Whether it's the guilt of losing a patient or the guilt of surviving your own attempt, the common thread is this: grief for what could have been and for what your survival means. In both scenarios, guilt becomes the shadow of survival, a silent presence that follows you around. It whispers, why you or why not them? For autistic individuals, this shadow often grows longer because we don't always understand or follow the social scripts around grief, guilt, or healing. We feel deeply, but we show it differently. And we're left alone with these emotions. We haven't been taught how to name or allowed to a safe space to express. But guilt isn't proof that you did something wrong. It's proof that you care deeply, that you feel the weight of life, of death, of existence itself, and that you carry that weight with dignity, even when it hurts. So whether you're a paramedic haunted by those that you couldn't save, a suicide survivor navigating fragile relationships, an autistic person trying to survive in a world that misunderstands your emotions, your guilt isn't shameful, it's human. And the fact that you still show up, still care, still attempt to make sense of it all, that's what makes your survival meaningful. You don't need to carry your guilt alone. You don't need to apologize for surviving. Sometimes survival isn't a celebration. Sometimes it is just another step, another breath, another day. And that, in itself, is enough. If this episode resonated with you, whether you're a first responder, a survivor, an autistic, or someone who loves one, I hope it offers some validation and understanding. I know these conversations can be uncomfortable, but they matter deeply. I hope we keep having them. Let's keep telling the truth about what it means to survive. Take care.
I hope you find some peace of mind in this lifetime.